All right, I'm going to talk today a little bit about a paper that me and Andrew Muhammad, who's our trade specialist at the University of Tennessee, myself and Dr. McDonald also did it at USDA. We kind of looked at some of the impacts of the China-U.S. trade dispute for the cotton sector. So you will see some similarities with some of the data that was presented in this morning session by Dr. Robinson. So again, what we looked at was kind of not what's going on right now, but kind of what went on in 2018, 2019. I do want to acknowledge our funding source. The Office of the Chief Economist gave us some money to end up doing this paper. So I'm going to kind of step through the background, kind of some of the rationale for why we ended up doing the study, look at kind of the U.S.-China trade dispute, where we're at, kind of provide a bit of an outlook for ag trade in 2020, and then I'll step into kind of the meat of what we were talking about, which is how has the trade dispute affected the U.S. cotton sector, talk about exports and prices, and then kind of end with Chinese cotton and yarn imports. There's some interesting dynamics that have changed, not necessarily directly as a result of the trade dispute, but has changed over time. It's kind of background and rationale on this. I'm not going to go through all these points, but essentially back in 2018, we were doing a lot of work in regards to the China-U.S. trade dispute in terms of soybeans. That was kind of the hot topic. Obviously, that one was the one that caught a lot of the popular press headings. There's a lot of work being done out of the Corn Belt on what the actual impact of that was. And so we had Dr. Jody Campici approached Andrew and I and said, okay, well, we'd like to see a little bit more information on, okay, how is this really affecting cotton rather than soybeans? Because soybeans was getting a lot of the headlines. So again, what we looked at is obviously it's smaller in terms of the magnitude of exports to China, soybeans at $21.6 billion, whereas cotton at $5.8 billion. Dollars with about $1 billion of that exported to China. When China put on those 25% tariffs on both soybeans and cotton, what it actually did was kind of increase those tariffs depending on the out of quota imports up to maybe a maximum of 65%, which was the addition of the 25% on the existing 40% tariffs. So looking at kind of just a quick overview of the U.S.-China trade dispute, when we kind of step through kind of a timeline, a lot of this started back in January 2018, where the president ended up signing proclamations for imports of large residential washers and solar panels. After that, it kind of escalated over time up to where we're at right now. When we look at the U.S.-China deal, we're expected to have that phase one resolution or that phase one signing on January 15th. The big one, and Dr. Robinson mentioned this, is $40 to $50 billion in ag exports over the next 2 years. We'd love to see some details on that, because obviously the devil's is going to be in the details as to what the actual market implications are going to be for cotton and for other ag commodities. When we think about comparing kind of pre and immediately after the trade dispute started occurring, this is world exports, so we're not delving down into China at this point right now. But we're looking at agriculture and related products, about $151.5 billion after that, $141.2 billion, so a decrease of 7%. Obviously, that negative impact is not equally distributed over all commodities, so we kind of pick some select commodities. Soybeans, 24% decline, corn, 17.9%, cotton, 10%. Tobacco, and then coarse grains as well. So again, the coarse grains one, think sorghum, very adversely affected by the trade dispute with China. And then there were some of the other products, ag-related products, forest products haven't got as much attention. But if you look at specific to China, what we end up seeing is soybeans, again, a 52% decrease. And again, these are in dollars, so this is the value. Forest products, 43%, cotton, 36% decline in the value of imports into China. And then again, you have coarse grains. That does include corn and sorghum. So again, looking kind of to 2020, agriculture exports are currently projected by the USDA to actually increase 2.5 billion, so 137 billion excludes forestry and spirits. Products, obviously, are not going to be evenly affected. We have primary increases driven by pork, beef, and soybeans. Obviously, ASF in China is playing a dramatic role in those pork exports being projected at $6.3 billion, up $800 million. Beef exports, again, that's estimated to be up about $300 million at $7.8 billion. And then again, soybeans are expected to rise, and cotton modestly rise $100 million to nearly $6 billion. So if we kind of delve a little bit more into what ended up occurring with cotton in kind of the 2018-19 time period. So the implications, obviously there's larger trends over the past decade that need to be also considered when we're doing this analysis, because obviously this doesn't occur in a bubble. There's several other factors that are influencing what's going on both in the U.S. and globally within cotton markets. So again, trends over the last decade maybe have lessened the impact of China's retaliatory tariffs on cotton. And I'll talk a little bit about that, particularly in terms of Vietnam, at the end of this presentation, and how that's kind of shifted. And again, it's not a direct effect from the trade dispute. This is a broader agriculture trend that has ended up occurring over time. There is little doubt, though, however, that we have seen an adverse effect in the cotton sector. Now, the question a lot of times is, what is the duration of that effect, and what's the magnitude of that effect? And unfortunately, we don't have great data on that, but what I'll do is I'll kind of step through some of the preliminary analysis that we have done. So just to kind of frame where we were coming from. And again, this kind of puts into perspective some of the trends. So again, you have to be a little bit careful trying to extrapolate too much from the data. This goes all the way back to 2001, ends in 2019. And what we've got is we've got the rest of the world exports to China in gray bars. We've got the U.S. exports to China in the blue bars that are at the top. And then we have Chinese ending stocks. So we're looking at kind of two different time periods here where you've got what I've seen this in several papers where they refer to that as the stocks building time period, right? And that's kind of where you go from 2010 until 2013, where we ended up seeing that peak of Chinese stocks at about 66.4 billion or million bales. Then what we ended up seeing is they started eroding into those stocks. And again, what we've seen is only recently we've started to build up that export when you look at from 2015 up until 2017 into 2018. What you do notice is as we have seen continuous from 2017 to 2019 increase in exports, that share represented by U.S. exports to China has decreased. So again, I'm not going to go through all this. This kind of outlays kind of the cotton prices, how it's reacted from 2017 up until 2019, and some of the key time periods in terms of the trade dispute with China. And so again, obviously one of the big takeaways from this is that we have a multitude of different variables that are affecting prices during these time periods. It is very difficult to coax out what is that trade-related price effect versus everything else that's going on, right? So when you look back in 2018, when we ended up starting seeing some of those larger projections for the crop, what we ended up seeing was prices come down. And then recently, and I thought Dr. Robinson did a good job of explaining this, as we've seen those production estimates come down in terms of U.S. production, we've actually seen a bit of a price rally as we move from August into December this year. So this one right here is U.S. cotton exports by importing country. A couple of things I really want to highlight here. The first one, again, is Vietnam, where we've had very consistent, steady growth since 2009 all the way to 2019. What also we want to end up looking at is that peak in cotton imports to China back in 2010, 2011. And where we've kind of seen that level out relative to when we were going through that stock building process from that previous chart, right? So what we've ended up seeing is a decrease. What we have ended up seeing that's kind of countered this effect is increases, continued increases in Vietnam, and then additional exports to other areas of the world. So again, when you're looking at this, what you will notice is of all the bars that are in there, China's the only one that really kind of took a step back when you go from 2017-18 to 2018-19. This is another one that we use kind of as a proxy for that price differential that might be as a result of the tariffs that were put on U.S. cotton. So what we ended up looking at was the price difference between Brazil and the U.S. Farm price. So we use AMS and the University of Sao Paulo. So again, what we ended up seeing in Brazil is we've seen prices ended up spiking in that 2018 into the early summer of 2018 in Brazil. And so again, there's more uncertainty at that time. Now again, one of the things that resulted in this dramatic price decline is you have to think about how big of that crop was. That second crop in Brazil was much higher than what was initially going to be anticipated, and so we've seen those prices converge over time. This is another one. Again, this one's got a little bit more moving pieces to it, but essentially what we're graphing here is the monthly average A index price divided by the U.S. upland spot price. So again, what we're looking at is the blue line is 2018-2019. The gray line is the three-year average price ratio, and then the orange line is 2017-2018, or the year right before we ended up having the trade dispute. So from 2014-2017, we've seen this ratio average about 1.16. In 2018-19, that ratio increased to about 1.3. So again, what you're seeing is an indication of an increase in the disparity between global prices in the U.S. over this short period of time. So when we look at Chinese cotton and yarn imports, this is another one that goes into how kind of the industry is continuing to evolve. If you look at China cotton and yarn imports, this goes from 2009 until 2018-19. In the dark orange bars, what we have is we have cotton quantity, and then in the yellow bars, we have yarn quantity. So if you look at kind of the peak, in 2011-2012, they were importing about 5.34 million metric tons of cotton and 1.12 million metric tons of yarn. You look at 2018-2019, 2.1 to 1.92. So what you ended up seeing between those 2 years was a change from a low of 17% to roughly half of Chinese imports were coming from yarn rather than cotton. You look at Chinese import by source. Again, I don't think this is going to surprise a lot of people, but what we've seen is we've seen a decline in the U.S. and then an increase in Australia, India, and Brazil. And so again, we chose those countries. Obviously, we've got very similar types of cotton, but when we look at Chinese imports, they've steadily increased since 2015-2016. This was benefiting U.S. exports before the trade dispute ended up happening. But then again, what we've seen is we've seen those export levels fall off. So again, if you kind of look at it, trying to compare amongst, and I'll use the word peer group very loosely, but from Australia, we've seen an increase of 97%, India by 127%, and Brazil by 480%. Over that same time period, we ended up seeing U.S. imports decrease 34%. And again, this kind of gives you kind of the seasonal nature of the imports. So again, this kind of breaks and kind of going around the world here. What you end up having is you have the U.S. in the upper, I guess it'd be upper right-hand corner, Brazil in the lower left-hand, and then Australia in the right. And what I really want you to focus in on is where these blue arrows are. So that January through March time period in all three of these. And what you will notice is typically, so again, when you look at the three-year average and 2017-18 versus the blue line, what you end up seeing is that's typically when U.S. Exports end up increasing. You didn't end up seeing that, but when you go down to Australia and Brazil, what you've seen is a prolonged export interval in Brazil and a spike in Australia. This is one that we kind of looked at as kind of a secondary, because I don't necessarily think that this is driven. Maybe there is an impact here. But we looked at U.S. cotton exports to Vietnam and China yarn imports from Vietnam. And so it doesn't take a lot of, I ran the R-squared, I don't even remember what it was, but just visually you can see that there's a correlation there and a pretty strong one. And so when you're looking at this data, it's pretty reasonable in my opinion to say that there is U.S. cotton making it into China. It's just it's going through Vietnam and then the yarn is getting sent to China. So again, since we're looking at this from 2009-2010 all the way to 2018-2019, I don't think you can really correlate this with the trade dispute. This is just a change in the way that we've ended up seeing some of U.S. cotton end up getting into China. So again, there is maybe a little bit of something different that's happening in 2018-19. You're seeing a little bit of divergence. But again, I think that there's a real strong correlation there for U.S. cotton entering the Chinese market through Vietnam in the form of yarn. So kind of just in concluding, you know, global trade and price data suggests that the U.S.-China trade war has definitely had an impact, definitely on export prices or prices and exports. China's cotton imports have been recovering since 2015-16 when they ended up having those massive stocks. They declined, and then they've started to, I don't want to say build stocks, because going back off of Dr. Robinson's talk this morning, but kind of maintaining stock. So again, there could be the opportunity to increase some additional exports into China, but unfortunately most of that benefit has actually been received by Brazil and Australia, and this was particularly evident in those first few months of calendar year 2019. One other thing that we did want to end up pointing out is USDA's long-run projections do show China's total imports doubling in 4 years after 2019-20. So any additional constraints, tariffs, trade disruptions would really potentially dramatically affect where that cotton is being sourced from, whether it's U.S., whether it's from Brazil, whether it's from other competing countries. So again, when we look at the current tariffs, and this is one that it's challenging to kind of wrap your head around this because there are numerous issues with cotton production in Brazil, as was discussed this morning. But is this a method when we have these tariffs on that's stimulating additional production in Brazil? It was mentioned the double cropping systems, being able to get that second or that crop of cotton behind soybeans. But again, this could be something where there could be a long-term implication of market share that could make it challenging for the U.S. to regain that long term the longer this trade dispute continues on. One thing, and again, I hate to always, you know, close with kind of an anecdotal evidence of something, but I have extensive discussions with some of the brokers in Memphis that travel down to Brazil frequently. And when you're looking at some of these farms buying massive numbers of pickers, big round bale cotton pickers, that is not a short-term investment. That is something where that production is anticipated to at very least be stable, and I think you could make a very reasonable argument that they're anticipating a greater amount of production and hence export competition out of Brazil. With that, again, I'd like to thank the USDA Office of the Chief Economist for assisting in funding some of this research. And I will entertain any questions, or if Stephen feels I've missed something, he can definitely chime in. Yeah, we did do some of that analysis. We did not feel comfortable putting it in the paper, so take that for what it is. But where we were looking at was a short term, and when I say short term, we really honed in on that 3-month interval at the start of 2019, where you're looking at probably somewhere between a 2 to 3.5 cent disruption. Now, again, if you take the market facilitation payments, you can look at the poster there. I had a student that's now working at FSA put that together before she left me. It's difficult to determine the compensation on that over multiple years because you structurally changed the MFP payments, right? It was initially done at 6 cents per pound for 2018, and then it got aggregated up. And so, again, that's one that, was it compensated at the correct amount, I guess is what you're getting at. I don't have a strong, I don't even want to say opinion. I can't really tell you if it was compensated at the correct level, right? When they initially released, or when Rob Johansson released that white paper on how they ended up determining the trade impact, that initial formula, it wasn't perfect, but it was consistent and it made sense from an economic standpoint. This newer second round of MFP payments, I think you get into a little bit more of murky water there, I guess, is the best way to end up putting it, as to whether you're compensating directly for the trade impacts. Because if you think about it just intuitively, when you're doing a per planted acre payment, what you're saying, I don't know if this can go back. Is across all commodities, the impact is roughly the same. And I don't think that's a fair assertion at all. So, again, that's just an opinion. It's not anything that I would want to end up getting too tied to. Any other questions? Yes, ma'am. That is a good question. I do not have a good answer for that. Stephen might be.
With respect to China importing U.S. cotton, but companies in China would get a dispensation from the 25% of tariffs right now?
Yeah.
State Reserve doesn't pay a tariff, and some of these actors for the State Reserve might not pay a tariff. You know, so it's a lot murkier there. But we saw cotton go into China larger than you would think with a prohibitively high tariff. But, and so we would understand some of the special dispensation for a processing quota or something. But a lot of it actually ended up stuck in a warehouse, and it's actually subsequently been exported or is finally down to be sold.
And if you look at soybeans as the example, they did waive, and I forget what the exact quantity was, but they did waive that tariff for some of the companies that were looking to import. So, again, in terms of cotton, I'm not aware of that. Well, I'm not going to speak on behalf of the government of China on that. I mean, I think it's clear that they are allowing that to happen. Now, whether they're happy with that, and then I guess the secondary question behind that, not to get way off onto something, I don't want to open this up, but what are the relationships with the companies in Vietnam with Chinese firms, right? And so, again, there's multiple layers to that. So I don't have a good answer to that question. I will say that. I think that gets very complicated in terms of Chinese policy, and I am most definitely not an expert on that.
I mean, there's a lot of Chinese firms who
we discussed that a little bit this morning, and I have looked at some of that data. And, you know, again, I don't want to paint too broad a strokes here, but there's kind of two ways that Brazil has increased acreage. And the first one is obviously expanding the current amount of row crop acreage, and that can be at the expense of rangeland, you know, other non-productive land. And then the second component is the double cropping systems, right? And so again, when you are planting soybeans, harvesting them off, the earlier that they can get them off, it increases the likelihood of them being able to follow it with cotton. So when you're looking at that January, early February time period, if you can get in there and plant cotton, you can end up doing that. The other one that you end up looking at is kind of a transition, and you've seen more of this in corn to date, but you could potentially see that in cotton to some extent. Corn has basically switched from where they were doing the majority of it as first crop to where they're doing the vast majority of it as second crop. And so again, the long-term potential in Brazil, I think, is still very positive. I don't think that they have, I don't think they've hit a limitation in terms of what they're able to do, both from expanding acreage or doing more advanced double crop systems. Now, again, I'm not an entomologist, and I'm not a soil expert, and so I am sure there are a tremendous amount of obstacles in order to enhance those systems. But again, I think that there is a tremendous amount of opportunity. And again, this was another question I asked the panel earlier this morning. I don't have an answer to it, but all my guys out in Memphis are really wondering where does that expansion in the cotton industry, how is it limited both in the short term and the long term? And you know, I don't want to say the consensus this morning, but the panelists' thoughts were that we'll kind of see it level, but long term, I think there's a tremendous opportunity. So, well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.